Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Kania. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from PrideOfDetroit.com. Eric, the Lions, a resounding 42-29 win over the Seattle Seahawks on Monday Night Football at Ford Field. This week, Lions have a bye, so we don't have anything to talk about. This might be the beginning and the end of the show.
I think we have some ideas on how to fill it, but yeah, it was an important win because if you look at the NFC North teams,
They're chasing now, chasing the Vikings.
well, they all, well, yes, certainly the Vikings are only one of only two teams undefeated still, but all three have winnable games this week. So if the Lions would have lost that game and been 2-2, and then all the other NFC North teams, if they win this weekend, the Lions would have been in last place in the division. And I don't think that would have sat well with this fan base. I think there would have been a lot of panic. And so getting that win and now being 3-1, they're in second place in the division, regardless of what happens this weekend. Doesn't matter. Win or loss, nobody was going to change the order at the top. So it was a big win. Keeps them in a nice spot. They get the break. They can get healthy. And, you have Dallas right off the jump, and then you get Minnesota. And we'll see if Minnesota is still undefeated when the Lions face them. But Minnesota's path is they got a nice early schedule that they're really taking advantage of. And they're playing well. They've beat a couple good teams in there as well. It's not just been like cakewalks, that's for sure. But, I think water's going to find its level at some point with them. And for now, the Lions seem like they started slow, but have been getting hot lately. And the last two games, you saw noticeable improvement. And there's, I in my opinion, they're just starting to hit their stride now, which is a good time to get healthy and, go to Dallas and get some revenge again.
Vikings face the Jets in London on Sunday morning to you and I, but Sunday afternoon to the folks in London.
Yeah, that's winnable. Like, I'm not scared of the Jets. Jets look terrible.
Right. Well,
So,
I don't know. You know what? The one thing, we're still in that phase where
sure,
any team
sure.
could, I mean, it's true all year, but like
100%.
more so right now, like any team can win any of these games. These early season
Oh
games,
yeah.
like wild stuff happens.
All the time. Yeah, and there's good teams that are have bad records right now, and there's bad teams that have good records, right? And like I said, that's why I say I'm not too worried about the Vikings at this stage. We know they're talented. I just don't have a lot of faith in their quarterback. I don't think Sam Darnold is the answer.
Bears host the Panthers, and then that should add some more insult to injury to Panthers fans.
I would
And
think.
then the Packers visit LA to face the walking wounded Rams.
Yeah, catch them at a time, when they're really decimated. And Rams are always a threat, but it's just they catch them at the right time. How about the Packers having Malik Willis 2-0 and Jordan Love 0-2? Find
That's
that
just a
interesting.
quirk.
Sure.
Once again, it's this early season stuff. Like they really game plan the crap out of the games that Malik played. They got the running game going, and I don't know, everything just ended up working out for them. But they also hit the buzzsaw of the Vikings this past Sunday. And even though Love was bad, it was a close game, 31-29, but still nervous about them. Maybe more nervous about them than I am the Vikings.
I mean, look.
I'm nervous about both of them, sadly.
This
Why
path,
are they so, both of them, so well read?
the path's
Year after
never going to
year.
be easy, but you know what? I think the Lions, and look, I think the Lions are playing with the target. I think, the opponents are coming in and they're so dialed in and so focused on trying to beat the Lions. There's a lot of value in trying to knock off, a team that was really good last year. And if you've noticed, I don't know if you've noticed this, but a couple of my colleagues at Pride of Detroit have. the after a team plays the Lions the following week,
They
they're just
totally fall flat.
terrible. They're absolutely terrible. Yeah. The Rams, after playing the Lions, just got dismantled by the Cardinals. The Bucks got dismantled the week after playing the Lions, and then bounced back in week 4. And then Cardinals, same thing, dismantled after playing the Lions. And I really think there's some merit to that, with the fact that teams are gearing up to face the Lions, and there's a little bit of a letdown, a little bit, regardless of what the outcome is. When you it's think about how Detroit was when they went into KC last year, and they were geared up for it. And then what happened when they came back home? They
No, they
lost
still played
in
a tight
overtime.
game against Seattle.
Sure,
They
sure.
still made, they fell behind and then made a frantic comeback.
Sure.
But I get what you're saying. That trend that your colleagues there were talking about, it's going to be halted this week. Seahawks
Yeah, I
host the
think so.
Giants on
Yeah, I so
Sunday afternoon.
yes.
So
I agree.
I don't think it's going to continue. But if the Giants do go up there and win like 28-10, then they really got something on their hands there.
Yeah, certainly. Let's talk
All
about
right.
that game. Let's talk
Yeah, let's
about the
talk
Seahawks
about the
game.
game. Transaction, well, transaction-wise, nothing's going on, obviously. It's the bye week. Injury-wise, we're going to put Frank Ragnow on the injury report because he's going to be on it every week from here on out anyways. But seemingly fine. He wanted to play this past Monday. He's probably going to
Yeah.
play next week in Dallas. It's in Dallas, right? I'm not. Yeah.
Correct. Correct.
So for that revenge game.
Yeah, I didn't really notice any significant injuries during the game against Seattle. So, and Frank was really the main one on the injury report as heading into that game. So, I do expect he's going to at least be on the injury report. We'll find out, the significance of it. Brian Branch, of course, had an illness, which I don't know the full details on yet. And, back of my head, I'm a little bit worried because illness can mean a variety of different things. But, and they were very quick to rule him doubtful, a day and a half ahead of the game. So it kind of raised a couple of red flags for me, but it could just mean he was sick. It could mean he had COVID. It could mean a variety of different things that would have kept him out of the game. Could have been recall from the concussion. Like he could have had like a he could have regressed, and it could have been something along those lines. Like I don't know. I don't know what it was, and there's a million different routes that it could be, and I don't know what they are. I don't know what the right answer is anyway. I mean, so he'll be on the injury report as well. And it might not be much beyond that. I think the one notable thing that we should talk about that happened after we did our podcast last week was Melifonwu ends up going on IR. And with Melifonwu going on IR, they didn't replace him. So the roster right now is actually at 52 players. They had could have signed a player, but if they would have signed someone to the practice from the practice squad or off the street or whatever, chances are that player would have been inactive anyways, and so they didn't feel pressed to make a move. And they'll go into the bye week, have a chance to think about what they want to do, look at maybe some people coming back from injury, weigh their options, make a decision on how to add that 53rd player later. But Melifonwu, I have to imagine he had some sort of setback because he already missed 4 games, or he missed 3 games before he got put on IR, but for like 4 weeks worth of practices. So now he's going to be out another 4 games. So it's 7 in total. And like, it didn't have to be this way. They could have put him on IR right off the jump, and then they could have signed another player. They could, and then he would have just been available whenever he wanted to bring him back, whenever he got healthy. But now they're back stuck to keeping him out 4 games, and I don't know. For those who might be wondering why didn't they wait until after the bye to IR him, it's simply because by IRing him ahead of the game, that game counts as game one of the 4 games he has to sit out. If they IR'd him like over during the bye, it would have been another like 2 weeks of time that he would have to be out longer. Like, so it was just a let's get him on IR get the clock moving on him, and then we'll get a chance to bring him back a bit later. But pretty disappointing that this is where he ends up after that slow recovering what they call ankle injury, but was also, I guess, at one time reported as an Achilles. So got to be disappointing for him, disappointing for the team.
Bye doesn't count as a game in those
Does
IR
not.
situations. Okay.
Nope, does not. It's straight game.
All right. Superlatives. That's going to be the theme of the show today. So we'll start with the Lion offense. Jared Goff played his best game as a Lion, 18 of 18 in the air. The one incompletion was called back thanks to offensive pass interference by Brock Wright, correct? If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, one of the tight ends, right?
With what? 292 yards passing, a pair of touchdowns, caught a touchdown pass, all those stats I listed there, first time in the NFL history that quarterback did all those things in one game. As a team, right? 19 of 19 with Amon-Ra St. Brown's touchdown to the aforementioned Jared Goff, pushing the total passing numbers up to 299, three touchdowns. That three touchdowns and how many passing attempts, right, puts the touchdown percentage in the range of a perfect passer rating. A lot of people are upset. Goff individually didn't have a perfect passer rating.
Do you know why he didn't get the passer rating? Because I had to look it
A
up.
touchdown percentage. He only threw two touchdown passes in 19 attempts.
Yeah,
And
if
it's
he would
got
have
to
had
be
a
over 11.2% or something.
right. It was interesting. I was in the locker room or waiting outside the locker room for it to open, and some of the radio personalities were in the hallway discussing the safety being the reason that he didn't have a perfect passer rating, which I thought was interesting. But yes, you hit
Right,
the
yeah.
nail on the head. It was touchdown percentage. The touchdown percentage and completion percentage, those are all factors in. Plus, you're talking about how many yards is he getting per completion. Like, all those things kind of factor in. Safety does not count. Sacks do not count. It's all
Right.
about
Anything
passing.
running wise does not count.
Correct.
Yeah, well, everybody was probably just wondering. And it's weird, like how. Because that's always existed, right? When we were kids and we were youngsters, we were talking about football, you'd always come up like you'd just say what you think it is, and then a lot of people would pretend like they know exactly what they're talking about. And then most of the time you're never proven wrong. There was no Google back then. And there wasn't, 80 million different podcasts like this one or Twitter feeds or Instagram feeds, like that are going to regurgitate all this information. They're going to set everybody straight. So I don't know why everybody still does it, but I don't know. It's probably just part of who we are as humans. But Goff was fantastic. They finally went back to everything that worked last year. Ben
Yes.
Johnson certainly deserved a game ball. I know there was a big deal because Jared Goff didn't receive one, but
Well, he got one. He got one the day after. They
all right,
do
well,
a
fine. He gets paid $3 million a game. That should be his game ball every week.
Yeah, he can afford to throw game balls into the
Right.
stands.
Right.
Like, yeah, no, I think the progression that Goff has had over the four games has increased. Definitely what had it was subdued the first few weeks of the season, and was coming into his own in Arizona. Didn't quite have a complete game. We talked about the fact that he needed it. It was one of my I had four keys to the game. That was one of my keys, that Goff needed a complete game, and he certainly had one. And it was nice to see. Perfect timing, and everything looked good. He looked calm. He had good decision making, really, really good footwork in the pocket. Play action was working. The play calling was masterful. Set things up, called things at the right time. Just decision after decision was working on offense. And when the Lions are playing like that on offense, I don't know if there's a team that can beat them. They're that good.
Right. Well, they were just about as unstoppable. 42 points. None of them were scored defensively. That's pretty much as unstoppable as it gets. Although the defense did set them up with one short field in there.
True.
Montgomery and Gibbs were solid, great in the first half. Things kind of tailed off in the second half. Didn't really make a big difference.
No,
Like
I mean, they
Zaha was
scored.
already concerned about the run, and then the guys from the passing game were doing their thing.
Yeah, three touchdowns for on the ground. That certainly
All in the
helps,
first half.
right? Yeah, and look, Montgomery was just incredible.
One of the
The
plays of the
big
year.
play was it was a catch, right? It wasn't even it was a run. The angle that we have from where we sit, it was like you could see directly behind Goff and like right down the line to where he was throwing to Montgomery. And when he threw it and I saw Witherspoon closing, I was like, oh no, like this is a setup to get injured type of a play. I was worried that Goff had put him in a really bad spot. And then, boom, he lowers the hit and he lowers his shoulder, but delivers a hit and then breaks tackle, breaks tackle, breaks tackle, breaks tackle. Yeah, just gone. It was just sensational. 40 yards total on the play, but everything about that play was delicious. I loved it. I could have, I watched it about 100 times already. It's amazing.
Hard to get away from, and it's certainly everything we know about Montgomery. ESPN has to be very happy with how that game turned out for
Oh
them,
yeah. Oh
because
yeah.
you have Montgomery's catch and run, and then you have Kenneth Walker on the other end with his like his somersault and with, as Aikman would say, his wrestling moves. On what was that? Was on Anzalone or Campbell? I don't know why I'm
Anzalone,
forgetting. It was on
Anzalone.
Anzalone and
Yeah.
a couple of great runs. It was a whole lot of great visual football for fans out there. It wasn't
Yeah.
one, definitely not a slow game by any stretch of the imagination.
And then the next fun one is JMO, the 70-yard catch where he starts high stepping at the 30 because he's just that far ahead of everyone else.
Faster than, he knows he's faster than everybody else on that field,
It
so
was unbelievable. Like I don't think I've ever seen a player. I mean, I don't even know if I ever saw Dion start high stepping from the
yeah, he
30.
probably did,
I mean, maybe on a kick return where he beat somebody, right? But
or an
I don't
interception
know.
return.
Yeah, I mean, but yeah, if it's low down at the end zone or something. But yeah, it was pretty sensational, explosive plays. And I didn't go back and total them up, but when you start talking about runs that are over 12 yards, pass plays that are over 16 yards, those are the markers that the Lions use. I believe they certainly outdid the Seahawks in those explosive plays, and it's a big part of why they won, right? They're able to hold that line up. The defensive line was injured, but they were able to hold up really well, and didn't have Frank either during that time. So, just sensational, right? Like just a really good showing on offense all around, and one that I think you'll look back at this game and say, that offensive performance really set them up for how the season played out from here on out.
One with how all the skill position players played great. To me, I don't know, maybe I hold the offensive line to too high of a standard. They weren't their best. You know,
So
the
they
safety, you have these two great tackles, and the safety's kind of on them. Kind of on Goff too. Like I don't know. And there was how many was he, I should
So
be prepared for this. How many sacks did he take? It was three, right? He took three sacks. I thought it was two, but I guess the safety would be the third one.
and so here's the thing. He was pressured 11 times, okay? But
It's too many.
it was only over four plays because multiple guys got pressure at the same time. So he drops back, 21 or 22 times, and he's pressured on four of those 22. So it's not bad. The thing is they did get home on three of those plays when they needed it. And Mike McDonald is a good coach, and he called their defensive plays and he knew when to dial it up and he got it to work. I wasn't overly concerned especially because I thought they did really well in the run game. Panay is a dominating factor in the run game. Zeitler is a dominating factor in the run game. And if it I I I would run behind that right side as much as I could because they're just two big bullies on that right side of that offensive line. It works really well. The even without Frank, they moved in unison. They flowed together. I thought Oshika did a had a really nice game. And
Man, did you go back? Do
no,
you
I haven't
watch
listened to the
these? All
broadcast.
right, because Aikman was talking about them, Awashika, and they must tell them something in the production meetings that ESPN has with the Lions coaches on Friday, right? Or maybe it's Saturday for Monday Night Football. I don't know, but he was going on about them, especially when they ran a couple of times behind him at Decker, and I don't, the coaches must really like him. For them to push him on Aikman, be like, "Oh, you got to watch this guy. You got to bring him up," during the telecast.
Did you see the viral TikTok video about him?
I'm 42.
Okay, I found it because I found it as part of my job. But there's a girl who is a Seattle Seahawks fan who went to high school with
Oh, I
Ashika.
heard about this. Yeah, and he stood up to a bully. I did not see the video, but I heard about it.
So I wrote an article on it just earlier today, just because it was my day for the notes where we just kind of put a collection of stories together. And so I used that one as my feature because it was a cool story. And it was it's just I think it's really neat to see, high character players doing good things. And I think it's nice when a high character guy who's maybe a bit under the radar when it comes to attention, when he does something nice and he gets that positive recognition that it should be highlighted. And so,
Sure.
yeah, he was recognized for something he did good a while ago. And she has some very nice things to say about him. And I thought it deserved, like I said, it warranted some more attention because he's another one of these guys that he doesn't get a lot of attention. So when he does, I think it's important to talk about
We always hear a lot about the bad when it comes to
Certainly.
everybody, especially high profile. So it's always good to hear about the good, They probably should hammer on that stuff a whole lot more. That's it for the offense, right? Flipping over the defensive side of the ball, slightly different. Say they gave up 29 points, but it was, a back and forth game. The offense was scoring fast at a couple of junctures, and that could, affect the defense and slow them down. They stopped the run great in the first half, and then Walker kind of got going in the second half, which is good to see if you're a Spartan fan, but also kind of harrowing when you're. And you're hoping they hold them off because, like, well, that game had a lot of the hallmarks of when we first started this podcast, those first few years where the Lions would snatch defeat from the jaws of victory, where they'd be looking really good. And then, like with clock management and just the way the ball bounced a couple of times, and like when they take over possession and they find their way back into the game and end up defeating the Lions. Well, luckily that didn't happen, but. There were some moments where the Seahawks really could have gotten back into it.
Yeah, but I do think there were things that they needed to clean up. I do think that they were still trying to figure out the Sam linebacker position and how to utilize that properly. The refs were also very flag happy, in my
Here we
opinion.
go with the
No,
refs.
no, no, no.
Save
I'm
that
not
for 2 weeks
blaming
from now, Eric. Not this week.
them. No, but
Save it
I'm
for the
not.
Cowboys.
I'm gonna say I thought the majority of the flags, you could understand why the flag was thrown. I just wanted to point out, like, when you play against a big physical receiver who is big and physical with the corners, the corner has to be physical back, or they're just going to get beat up all game. And
Right.
so I completely understand Carlton Davis's frustration with
It's
the
pretty
flags
frustrating.
being thrown on him. Yeah, because like this,
What else is he supposed to do?
yeah. And he said as much. Like he said, this is how I have to play him. I don't have a choice, or I'm going to lose every time. And so I get it. I totally get it. I thought some were ticky tacky. But again, when you get a when you get flags flowing, it just makes it all the easier. Refs start looking for stuff. Once they call you for something once, they start looking for that to call you for it again, and then all of a sudden you get the same penalty called on you 5 or 6 times, it feels like.
What Terry on Arnold would say.
Well, you know, like I thought
Well,
he
he's a
played.
target now. Now he's just got to be aware. Like, that's why they got to work with him. Just like Aikman said, they got to put oven mitts on him in practice.
He's
You know,
got
they got
to
to get him to just not do anything. He's got to learn.
I think hand placement is a big thing. If he just locates his hands differently, that would be a big help. I don't think there's really anything like philosophically wrong with his game. I think a lot of it is just technique, learning and learning to play at the NFL level. That takes time. It's even the best, some of the best corners out there don't walk onto an NFL field and just start, right? Like Sauce Gardner is a rare player, right? Like you don't, it's rare to see a corner just walk on the field and be great like that. And there's a lot of positions like that where in the NFL, that there's a big learning curve, and Terrion's going through that, and that's completely understandable. And to be honest, he's further along in his development than some of the other rookie corners we've seen over the years, and so I'm encouraged with where he is. So I'm not worried about that. I do think some of the run game woes were just technique stuff, like you didn't set an edge properly. You didn't close on the right angle. If you add Brian Branch into the mix, I think the run game changes. The run defense changes. I don't think it's Kenneth Walker breaks out as much. At the same time, Kenneth Walker is a great running back. So he's going to get his. Like you're not going to hold him at bay for the entire game. He's gonna break some loose because he's good. But Branch, I think, was a more of a factor than maybe we want to admit. Kirby, I thought, played terrific. Linebackers, I thought, played very well. Jack Campbell continues to get better. And up
How did
front,
you like how they aligned him? Having
he just,
Malcolm Rodriguez play the mic.
well, they, I mean, a lot of the time, Malcolm would play. Okay, so they basically rotated like their top five, right? But Neiman and,
Yeah, you saw a lot of Neiman and Reeves Maybin on the field.
yeah, but they were more situationally based. In their kind of when the Lions were in three man sets, their preferred option was Malcolm at the will, Jack at the mic, and Anzalone at the Sam. But when they went to two man formations, it was either Jack at the mic and Anzalone at the will, or Malcolm at the mic and Anzalone at the will. And so they kind of just fluctuated those guys around. So Jack still played like 65, 70% of the snaps or whatever it was. Malcolm played his fair share. Anzalone played a full allotment like normal. But, and then the other two were kind of used, like I said, situationally. But that's kind of what I expected. When Jack was out there, Jack was the mic. He just wasn't the mic all the time. And when he wasn't, it was Malcolm. And to be honest, I don't think Anzalone is the best option at will at the same or at Sam at the same time. Malcolm, Anzalone, and Jack are your best three linebackers. And so I understand going to that set and making that set work. So you got to make do with what you have right now. You have at least three more games without Barnes, at least. And if you have to kind of mess around and tweak some stuff, it's fine. So it's not a big deal. They can make it work. And the idea of them like maybe leaning on a guy like James Houston to fill that role, I think we found out this game, James Houston is definitely not going to be in the mix for that. 14 snaps, two penalties, no tackles, no impact, nothing beyond those penalties. His day was pretty rough. And he had no opportunities at linebacker. He was all just pass rushing defensive end, and he did not make an impact. And the stuff that we've been talking about with him, I am starting to wonder if it's for real, if it's creeping up for real. And maybe he isn't long for the roster, which is a crazy thing to say, considering how he had what he looked like a couple of years ago. But his production is not there. And you don't see much of that pass rush, bravado that he had a couple of years ago. And I don't know if he can get it back. And so I guess we'll have to see. He's got some work to do if he wants to get the opportunity. If he wants to get opportunities, he got some this game and didn't capitalize. So I wonder how many more he's going to get.
Going back to the linebackers, the one point they never put Anzalone at the mic. I think that still goes back to that 49ers game. I don't know if I'm gonna die on this hill, I guess. Everybody's like, who cares, Joe? The game was almost a year ago.
No, I think they've just realized that that Malcolm and Derek and Jack are all better suited for what they expect out of the mic, and Anzalone is much better in the outside backer positions. And to be honest, I agree with it. I agree with that completely. Malcolm and Derek can both kind of play inside out, and I agree with them in the fact that keeping Jack at them in the middle at the mic is really the best spot, and that's really only where I would use him from now on.
Kind of hit on everything there. I don't know. Do
The only thing we
Geno
didn't.
Smith, it is Tigers week, right? Like Geno Smith is the Jim Tomei of the Detroit Lions, as Tomei was to, especially with the Cleveland Guardians coming up this weekend for the Tigers. Like Jim Tomei always killed the Tigers, right? Geno Smith always kills the Lions, although he didn't win, so thank goodness. But he was fantastic. Like he was nothing short of fantastic. Like, and he's not very good. Yeah, but he always looks great against the Lions.
I the thing that separated him and Goff, in my
Well, Goff
opinion,
played just about perfectly, but Geno was excellent.
I agree up until the end of the game when it came time to close. They were in the red zone inside the five, I think, and he throw or inside the 10 at least. He throws a pass that gets deflected by Lee McNeil. Throws a pass that gets deflected by I forget. And then another pass that it was one of the backers. And then another pass that gets deflected by Carlton Davis. And then they go for it on fourth down and he overthrows them in the end zone and they turn over on downs. The next possession that they have.
Credit the inside the 10 defense.
No, great. Sure. But and then the next possession, he throws an interception to Kirby. And so when the game was on the line and you needed, like, he had a good game for sure. But the last two drives, when the game was on the line and they needed him to win it, the Lions defense outplayed him. And that's why they won by two scores instead of maybe just one.
All right.
Last thing, Hutchinson had 15 more pressures, according
Oh,
to PFF.
NFC Defensive Player of the Month.
Yep, he's got 40 pressures according to PFF. The next closest guy has 23 pressures. He's so far out ahead of everybody else. 6.5 sacks leads the league. His pass rush win rate leads the league by like 10 points.
The
It's
man on a mission.
he's just been sensational. And 15 more pressures is if you want to know how far ahead he was, he is. You could take these 15 pressures away, he'd still be in first place. Like that's how far ahead he is. And then you add this sensational 15 pressure game onto it, and it's like, my goodness, he's playing at a level I don't think a lot of us thought he'd be able to get to. And it's a lot of fun to watch because I think right now he's the betting favorite for defensive player of the year. If I'm
Well,
not
if you
mistaken.
listed the stats, he leads the NFL in sacks. Even though, four, although we love to say it, 4.5 did come in one game. He's got two in the other three games. He's been great, and I'm not trying to discount anything he's done. Well, it would be great if he had some help when it comes
Certainly.
to pressuring the quarterback. Maybe that was the point I'm trying to make. Like, he's got 40 pressures. He's only got 6.5 sacks. He probably should have 10. And if there was like another guy on the other side of the defense that would be, winning some battles, against the opposite side of the offensive line, help him out even more. Push the quarterback back towards him, or, because every other team, even though they're doing a bad job at it, they're going to be trying. They are trying to stay away from him.
Sure. So to add context to what you're saying, Aiden has 40 pressures. The next closest on the team is Levi Onwuzurike with 16.
It's not bad for an interior
No, it's
defensive
very
lineman.
good. It's very good. Next is 9 with Alim McNeil. Then 7 for Marcus Davenport, who's on a season-ending
He's not
IR.
done. Yep.
Everyone else has less than 5. Interesting enough, though, Mekhi Wingo has 4, as does Josh Pascal and DJ Reader. Nowoski played 8 snaps last game. He had 3 pressures. 3 pressures on 8 snaps. You
They
gotta
love
like
them.
that. Yeah, I'm gonna be very interested to see how that goes. So here's the deal. As much as we talk about Derek Barnes being such a sensational guy for the Sam because he can pass rush and drop, Derek Barnes has 1 pressure on the year, right? His versatility is really what makes him unique, and it can really trick defenses into playing. And when I broke down Aiden's 4.5 sack game, I highlighted the fact that Derek Barnes was a big part of that because of how he disrupted the protection plans of the offensive line. But his production as a pass rusher is definitely not at that level right now. James Houston has 1, Alex Anzalone has 1, Jack Campbell, Kirby Joseph, Malcolm, even Pecco has 1. But I would have hoped Derek Barnes had a little bit more. But that also says if you're looking to replace him, the production, he wasn't even producing at that high of a level. So it's not like a high level of production, but you certainly would like, I agree with you, you certainly would like to see more production opposite of Aiden. That would make life a lot easier.
All right. I guess that's enough of the Seattle game. It's great to come away with the win. Great to be 3-1 going into the bye. There's a lot, as you said, if it was 2-2, there'd be a lot of panic. Panic is subsided. I don't think anybody's too worried. And the Tigers have taken some pressure off the Lions because now everybody's all Tigers excited. So it's like, hey, Lions got a great win. We might be concerned. It's like, no, nah, we're not concerned about anything because Tigers are winning.
So, when the Tigers are tied 2-2 in game 2, and they hit the triple to score the 3 runs,
Ibanez.
I stood up and cheered. And I was apparently loud enough that Harper, my middle daughter, walked into the room and said, "Whoa, do you like the Tigers more than
Oh boy.
the Lions now?" So I was super excited. And I'm just a, I'm I would be more of a casual fan at this point, I
Yeah, you're a
think.
Detroit sports fan. I don't know.
Yeah.
I always struggle with what's the true definition of a
Sure.
casual fan. I guess you're a casual fan. I mean, I would even be put in the category, like the only real attachment I had with the Tigers throughout most of the regular season is just through fantasy baseball. And then like I'd catch the odd game here or there, and as a Xfinity customer, like
Oh, yeah. You
would
lost a
Bally
lot of
with
it.
yeah, lost it. I'm
Yeah.
just not gonna watch them. You know,
Yeah.
like that's, and I'd read about him, but that would be about it. And then until I watched the game at the Little League World Series and they beat the Yankees, and then I stayed more close to the team. I guess that would put me in the realm of casual fan.
No.
And
Well.
so like, but yeah, like I don't know, what's the definition of casual fan? Of
Well,
course, it's
can
just you and I haven't, because to me, casual fan is like, yeah, the team exists and you like them, and it's like I'll watch some of the playoff games at the bar or at a friend's house or something just because everybody else is doing it. I would
I think,
say it's
can you name 5 players? If you can name 5
casual
players on a team, then you're more than casual, I would
fan.
say. if that qual if
Well, it's
that's
easy
a
to name them all now.
right.
You know, we're all getting sucked in. You know, like Jake Rogers, he's no Bill Freehan. You know, like Spencer Torkelson, he's no Miguel Cabrera or Hank Greenberg. You know,
That's certainly.
Cold Keith's no Charlie Gerringer or Lou Whitaker. You know, Trey Sweeney's certainly no Alan Trammell. Matt Vierling, he's no George Kell. And Riley Green, he's no Wahoo Sam Crawford, but maybe one day. You know, he's got a long way to go in this career. Parker Meadows is no Ty Cobb, and
He's interesting. He's an interesting character. I'm interested in him.
Gary Carpenter's got some power, but he's no, you know, Al Kaline. They're it's this ragtag group of youngsters, and you know, the whole's just greater than the sum of the parts, or is the sum of the parts greater than the no, the whole is greater than the sum of the parts.
I've changed my mind. I do think you're a casual fan.
Okay. It's fine.
I'm just kidding. All right, hey, we kind of like expanded on like what we wanted to talk about on the back half of like trying to go through this roster and talk about what we've liked and what we haven't. We kind of talked about
Oh,
it
this
when we
isn't a
were.
Tigers podcast. Way to get, now you're the one getting me back on track. It's usually the other way around.
No, it certainly is. But I was thinking we can probably just gloss over a lot of those things, like point out anything, because like I said, like we talked about the fact that Jared Goff has improved, right?
Right.
So
If weeks 1 through 3, eh, week 4, all right. If we get 90%, if we get 85 to 90% of this the rest of the season, we're going to be pleased.
yeah, I agree with that. We haven't seen Hendon. Frohm's just still on the practice squad, and I think Goff is finding his rhythm. The receivers are getting excited about him, what he's doing on the field now, and it's all pointing towards the positive. So I think quarterbacks were in a good, nothing. I could say, let me start over. I would say it was a little surprising that he started out as slow as he did, but it's not surprising that he's already kind of righted the ship.
All right. Well, then let's move on to the running back. Like, I don't know, running back's been exactly, I don't, then the
Yeah.
one way running back is not exactly what I expected coming into the season is it's been all Montgomery and Gibbs. They've both been healthy. Craig Reynolds hasn't run the ball once, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe it was once. It's,
I don't think he has. I think you are correct.
and the
He
surprising thing is Vaki, it's like they haven't used him yet in any capacity. It's surprising because I thought they would. He'd have like a couple of plays run for him, but at the same time, not surprising in the fact that the Holmes system, or maybe it's the Campbell system, when it comes to rookies, we're going to have them do their one thing and get really good at their one thing before we start putting other stuff on their plate.
Yeah, and I do think I still think lining up as a fullback and then running him out on a wheel is in the game plan at some point. I just don't know when it's going to be. But I'm expecting it. Rushes, Dave Montgomery has 63, Gibbs has 54, Jared Goff has 8.
Yeah, well, now some of that was the uneven performances in the
Sure.
first couple of games, and the one, and I think he was trying to get himself out of it. He had those two first down runs in the back-to-back game. It's like it was him trying to break out of his own slump. It's like
Maybe,
I could
yeah.
still do something, right?
Jameson had 3 carries, Khalif had 1, and that's it. Nobody else. No Amon-Ra, no Vaki, no Craig Reynolds. So yeah, kind of expected. Montgomery, I think, has really been even better than what I was expecting.
Right.
I mean,
He's been really good.
he was terrific in camp. I just didn't know if it was just camp or if it was like for real. And it's for real. He's been great. He could be, if he plays at the level he's playing, I think Gibbs has improved as well. They could be really scary, a really scary tandem as the season goes on.
You know, with these two fellows, they are on pace currently to rush for 1,000 yards
Each.
apiece, right?
Yeah. Wow.
So if they both remain healthy, we're looking at Montgomery with 1,151 yards rushing, and Gibbs at 1,211 yards rushing. I don't think that's possible. You know, one of them's going to get hurt, one of them's going to miss a game or two, and things aren't going to stay balanced the way they are. But there's really no complaints about either of them. They've been great.
Yeah, I thought they'd maybe be more, a little bit more involved in the passing game. Gibbs has 11 catches. Montgomery has 9.
But that's what I attribute that to that first three games of Goff, like an uneven Goff play, where a lot of it was like we saw the normal offense on Monday. In those first three games, we saw Goff just firing the ball at receivers who are running, not crossing routes. They're just, you know, running hitches or running putt. Like, I don't know. It seemed like they were running a different offense for 3 weeks, and partially evident they weren't throwing to the backs.
I agree.
I could be wrong.
No, I agree. I think receiver, we've kind of knew Amon-Ra and Jama would be 1-2. Tim Patrick was the guy we were all expecting to be receiver 3 at some point, and I do think he's turned into that. I also believe he will be a much more steady presence as the season goes on, because those first couple of games were just get comfortable. 2 catches in game 2, 1 in game 3, 2 in game 4. He's basically in that Josh Reynolds role where that's going to be the norm. He's going to catch 2 passes a game, maybe 3 passes, and that's going to be about it. But I think he will get even better, and he'll draw the coverage. He'll go over the middle. He'll do the dirty work. He showed his blocking skills off this past couple of weeks as well. And so I think he's really cemented himself as wide receiver 3. Still, wide receiver 3 right now is behind 2 running backs and 2 tight ends. Because, we'll get into tight ends in a second. But Amon-Ra has 27 catches. No surprise. Jamo, 13. That makes complete sense that Jamo would be getting half the catches that Amon-Ra does. The surprising thing is that Amon-Ra has 252 receiving yards, whereas Jamo has 289, which is very impressive. Right. Of course, some of it aided by a couple of big plays. He's had a 50-yarder. He's had a 70-yarder. But
the very old school stat line for Jameson, well, the old school deep threat of the 70s and 80s, or the 60s, 70s, and 80s.
22.2 yards per catch at this point. That's his average right now. That's a really good number. And I think people are starting to see the player we saw the majority of time in camp, which was he's running more routes. He looks more nuanced in his routes. His hands look better. And the timing between him and Goff is really improved.
One thing you would like to see improve is just Amon-Ra St. Brown's yards per catch, whether it's, you know, he breaks a couple here or there. Mm-hmm. He's going to be in that range. I don't know. Was it last year? It was like 11 or 12 yards per reception. That's still better than, you know, 9. So I don't know. That's where we look for an improvement. Once again, it's hard to complain about St. Brown because he's got that huge chip on his shoulder all the time. And it's hard to complain about him as a player.
I agree. I'm a bit surprised Khalif only has 4 receptions at this point, but, you know, they really want Tim Patrick to be more involved, and so they've leaned on him a little bit more.
All right, tight end group. Laporta hasn't put up the numbers everybody expected, right? He was, you know,
correct.
If you play fantasy football, he would have been the number one tight end off the board. Yeah, I guess even more so in our area. But, you know, even across the country and across the world, he would be the top tight end. I think Brock Wright, like, it was a smart move retaining him to match that restricted free agent contract. He's been really good, except for when he's creating offensive pass interference penalties. So, got to hope that Laporta, you know, I don't even know if Say turns it around, but he's got 12 catches through. Has he played 3 or did he miss a game, or has he played all 4 games?
He played all 4.
Yeah, okay.
But he was injured. He was injured the first 2, and they were really taking it easy on him the first 2 weeks. But yeah, 12 catches, 147 yards. He's done it in 1 game, much less 4. So I agree. People are probably disappointed. And the nice thing is that 8 of his 12 catches have gone for first down. So you have to like that average as well. Right. You know, he is that safety net. He is that producer. And I agree with you. He will start to break out of his shell. I really think that they were taking it slow with him purposefully to manage that injury that kind of hung around for most of camp. So, yeah, Brock Wright, 7 catches for 49 yards. That's not, incredibly impressive. It's average of 7. That's fine.
It's fine for a backup tight number
For
two tight end.
yeah, exactly. 3 of his 7 went for first downs. That's, that's good too. Like you want that number to be, at least, you want it close to half, if not higher. And I think Brock has looked, really good for his role.
Parker Hesse, we've only seen him in like the heavy three tight end sets, hasn't had a chance to make a reception yet.
Correct.
I'm still
Correct.
surprised. I'm surprised he's holding on to that third tight end job, and he's holding off Zylstra and what's his name? Mitchell. No.
Yep, James
Yeah,
Mitchell.
Mitchell. Yeah. So I don't. Maybe we'll see more from him as the year progresses. I don't know. Maybe they'll find a way to use him, or he's just gonna be the third tight end, and that's that.
Trying to look up his pass. See his run blocking score has actually been run blocking grade from PFF is actually below average. But his pass blocking score has been sensational. And that's a huge thing. You want that running game, that run blocking score to go up a lot. But his pass blocking score is like almost 86, which is that's quite high. And for example, Penei Sewell's run blocking score is 87, right? Like it's, and he leads the NFL for tackles and run blocking. So for Parker Hesse to have a pass blocking score of almost 86, it's really good. He's doing good in that part of his role. And, he's only seen the field a handful of times. I mean, like, I think it's 36 snaps or something like that. So, but he's playing well as a pass blocker. And if you can be a good pass blocker, you'll make a living in the NFL. You want that run blocking grade to go up, though, for sure.
Down to the offensive line, we've seen 7 of them. It's like we've seen plenty of the starters, which is good. We missed Frank Ragnow in game 4. What are you going to do? Seeing Dan Skipper, we all hear about it when he comes in as an eligible receiver in home games.
Yeah, quite. I almost wish.
Kyle Uyashika, it's been the 7 of them.
Yeah, I almost wish they wouldn't cheer as much as they do for Dan Skipper when he comes in.
They just make it a point. They will. It'll start
I
to
hear you.
wane, like,
You
and
know, I.
that's when they'll hit him with a pass, or they'll pass it to attack. Like, it's going to happen again this year. They're going to lull everybody, just like the fake punt. Like, we
I
wouldn't
don't
have, nobody
know.
would have guessed that they would have ran that fake punt down at the 12-yard
No,
line or wherever it
I
was.
agree
It's
with
like,
that. I agree
they're
with
gonna,
that.
it will start to wane, and then that's when they'll hit us with something crazy.
Don't know, man. The Detroit fans know how to hold a grudge.
Right. Well,
And
that's
so
true.
I don't know if it'll dissipate the whole year, to be honest.
Do you think you'll hear it in Dallas? Like, because there's going to be
Oh, yes.
15,000 Lions fans in Dallas. So will they make noise? Because they will certainly do that. They will make a
I do.
point on doing it, running the 6 offensive linemen out there, and one
I
of
think
them
they
being
will.
eligible,
I think
and it
they
would be
will
Skipper.
definitely. Yeah, oh, certainly. Yeah, I think they will make a point to and if I hope the announcers are conscious of that as well. Okay, offensive line. The Penei Sewell, Frank Ragnow, Zeitler run blocking game right now for that trio, sensational. They're playing at a high level, and they're really like the cog in that run game for me. Obviously, the run game goes in a lot of different directions and all over the place, and that's part of what makes it beautiful. But the right side, center right, is just a powerhouse. And when you need it, that's where I would go all the time. The pass blocking has been a little bit better on the left, right? Like I think Decker's been a much better pass blocker. I think Auchika, even Graham maybe has been a better run blocker, but I think even Graham's been pretty solid as a pass blocker as well. So you're getting real good pass block production on the left, real good run production on the right, and a little blends here and there, but it's they're still best offensive line in football, in my opinion. All seven of them.
Yeah, no, and I agree. I just hold them to too high of a standard. I get
Yeah.
upset when they're like, why is there pressure here?
No,
They need to hold up here. But it's an
I get
NFL
you.
game. You know, like the guys on the other side of the line are good too, and they're gonna win sometimes. It's
I'm
not a
with you.
college game where you can see one team purely dominate the other one.
I'm
Start
with
with the
you.
number.
I think holding them to a high standard is more of a sign of respect than anything. Because they're talented. There's just as talented a collection of starters as they've had. And so,
In our lifetimes, that's for sure.
yeah, I mean, so they as a group continue to be the most valuable position group on the roster. And you don't do a lot of what you want to do at other spots if it's not for these starters up front. So they've been awfully good.
Flipping over to the defensive side of the ball. It's kind of it, things have kind of gone exactly the way we expected. Interior defensive line, we've had some injury issue. You know, DJ Reader wasn't ready in week one. Aleem McNeil got hurt a little bit. Like, there's been some injury pro and there's been some injury issues. They haven't been perfect. They've been fine. They've been great against the run. You know, things they weren't so great, you know, against Seattle, but it's really nothing to be upset about.
Yeah, up front, I think Aiden's been sensational. Like we just talked about, Aleem has been really good. He's really thrived with Reader in there. Onwuzurike has been, I mean, considering the expectations for him were really low, for him to play at the level he's at is awfully impressive. It's, you know, we were like, hey, if we get good production out of him, it'd be gravy. And I don't think you're just getting production. You're getting like starter level production. He was starting at left defensive end in a four man front opposite Aiden in Seattle. At times he kicked inside, but like there's going to be situations where that's where you're going to utilize him. He's going to be a 305-pound defensive end. And I don't know if you saw Nick Baumgartner's tweet. I retweeted it, but Levi dropped into coverage at one point, you know, at 300 pounds to be able to drop fluidly into coverages. It's awfully impressive athleticism to be able to do what he did there. So I'm excited about Levi. Interior is just going to get better. Hutchinson is playing out of his mind. You
Right,
have
yeah,
to like what's going on.
not too much more we can say about him.
Yeah, I think Pascal is going to get a little bit more recognition. I still think he flies under the radar for a lot of Lions fans. He's not dominating, but he's consistent. James Houston has been a disappointment. I do wonder if Agudé or Ukwu get called up from the practice squad and he gets like inactive to see if maybe they can add a spark that he hasn't been able to. Could be a real possibility that we see that in the coming weeks, but the line's been good. I think they are what they are. Wingo, like I said, Wingo's been good. And you know, Broderick will come back at some point and he'll just add some more depth to an already versatile front. So it should be good. It should be good to they're in a much better spot than they were previously.
Linebackers, they've been very good. The one thing, the Seattle, it, one thing we didn't mention about the Seattle game, and it could be just because, you know, Kenneth Walker is a physical player, Zach Charbonnet is a physical player, DK Metcalf's a physical player. They really started missing tackles in the second half, and it wasn't just on those guys, it was, you know, against all Seahawk players. And I don't know if it was just they were kind of worn down in that game, but it is something to watch going forward.
Yeah, they had like, if I'm not mistaken, Seattle had a long drive. Lions went three and out. Seattle had a long drive that scored, and then the Lions had a 70-yard pass that scored, and then Seattle was back on the field. So like they had like four drives in a row,
Right.
or three, I'm sorry, three drives in a row where the Lions were basically offense was only on the field like a minute and a half or less. And so they definitely, I felt like I gassed at one point there in the third, and there might have been like late fourth or something, but I'm sorry, early fourth. But yeah, there was definitely a sequence of events that I think certainly gassed them.
Yeah, and I know
As
that
far as
specific to the Seattle game, we really didn't see too much of it in the first three games, but I don't know, I guess something to watch going forward. But I don't know. Another position group where you can't say a whole lot of bad. This is the problem when they go 3-1. Like you know how much complaining we would have done in this type of episode during the Patricia era, you know?
Aiden Hutchinson leads the team with six tackles for loss, but Jack Campbell is next in line with four, and then Alex Anzalone with three. So that's the run defense. That's just them getting to the edge and being able to stop guys. Seven tackles for loss over four games from the linebackers. It's not bad. You'll definitely take that.
Campbell's definitely improved.
He's dropping into coverage further down the field, looking smoother. There's just, he's getting better here. He's getting better here. He's getting better here. And like all those things are starting to add up to the point where it's like he's becoming a very balanced player. And his snaps right now are at like around 65%. I think they're just going to work their way up, and he's going to be a guy. Eventually, he's going to be get to a point where he's going to be a guy you're not going to want to take off the field. Just kind of like what you have with Anzalone as well.
Speaking of guys that don't come off the field, we'll go to the corners. I don't know, did you want to hit on any other of the linebackers? Did you want to go down the roster at all?
No, I
We
think
talked about them a lot. We were talking about the Seahawks game in general.
I think we kind of covered those guys.
Defensive backs, Terrion Arnold, Carlton Davis, they've been on the field like every down. We saw a little bit of Bennett's Rakestraw when Carlton Davis had to come out of the game. So we had a pair of rookies out there for, but they've been holding down the fort. They've been getting penalized a bunch. They've been getting burned a little bit. Nothing different than any other set of corners or secondary men in the NFL, except for the
Sure.
more penalties than everybody else. But that's about
Sure.
it.
For perspective on that, Kirby Joseph leads the defense with 271 defensive snaps. Carlton Davis at 270, Terrion Arnold 257, then Hutchinson at 248. And we know Hutchinson doesn't leave the field unless he really needs to. The next corner on the list has 134. That's a Meek. And
Saw him a
then
bit against the Seahawks. More so they in that second half, they kind of got out of the base defense for a while.
after that, it's Kendall Vildor with 17. Like they just Rakestraw has four. So they have really heavily been relying on Davis and Arnold and then Amik when they go into their nickel package. And I think that's their preference. Like those are the guys that they want out there. At the same time, I keep hearing Rakestraw is the guy to watch. Like he's a guy to keep an eye
That's
on.
good.
He's been an outside guy, but he can play inside. He can back up all three spots. And we'll see if he can work his way onto the field or at some point. But they're excited about Rakestraw. That hamstring injury kind of zap came at a really bad time. And he misses two games, and then they're just working him back slowly in that fourth one. Come out of the bye, he should be fully healthy. He'll be a guy to keep an eye on.
And once again, one of the rookie, like we don't see a whole lot of them out of the first half, and
Yeah.
then they pick up speed when the second half comes along. Safety group, it's too bad we're missing Branch in week four. Kirby Joseph's been excellent, and we saw a lot of Brandon Joseph on Monday, but outside of Monday, those him, Lauren Strickland, they don't really get a ton of opportunities back there.
Right. Like I said, Kirby leads with 270, Branch has 180. Brandon Joseph has 94, and 94 is
Well, that's
basically
a
the
lot.
Seahawks. Well, it's the Seahawks game because remember Seahawks had like 80 plays,
Yeah, they had a ton of snaps. Yeah.
and then he took over for Branch when Branch had to exit. So he just was an injury replacement, and other than that, it has been Branch and Joseph. Branch has been sensational. I mean, I'm trying to remember where his what his pass deflections were. He has seven, and he didn't play in one game, so he had seven over 3 games. He also has two tackles for loss. His ability to get to the ball, his ability to drop in the box, it's just phenomenal, and I'm really excited about what he can become. At the same time, Kirby Joseph is playing at a Pro Bowl level right now, and I think he needs to be recognized by that. He's got four pass breakups. He's got three interceptions. All three come in the end zone at critical points. Game winner, of course, in the last one. He has 22 tackles. He has a tackle for loss. He's the second highest defensive grade on PFF. He has the highest run defense grade on the Lions roster per PFF. He has the second highest tackling grade per PFF on the Lions. Like, his everything that he's doing right now is hit. He has the highest coverage grade as well. So highest coverage grade, highest run defensive grade, second tackling, second on in overall defense, only behind Hutchinson. Kirby's playing sensational. Like, he really is. His ability to diagnose and put himself in the right position has been terrific. I think he's been really solid with his tackling. I don't know if he's has a miss or two. I think he has two misses, and one of those misses he was actually run into when he was trying to make the tackle by one of his own guys. So I'm very impressed by Kirby. I think outside of Aiden, he has been the guy on defense that I'm both equally, I don't know. I was going to say most impressed by, or like he was the most improved, but I think Levi's obviously the most improved, but I think Kirby's right there. His improvement has been sensational. He hasn't made a whole lot of mistakes, and he has been very, very reliable and playing at a high level. And I'm excited to see what happens, because if Branch is the player that we think he is, and Kirby continues to be the player that he is right now, you're talking about a sensational combination of safeties with the two of them. And I'm excited to see what they can do this year, because what I've seen so far has been terrific.
All right, Jack Fox. We're going to go to special teams.
Sure.
Jack Fox's numbers been pretty much right in line with his career averages. Although all the all right, so he's only had 14 total punts through four games. Three of them have been touchbacks, so the touchback number is up a touch. 20% of his get, yeah,
Couple of them were bad misses by the Gunners too. So,
right.
but yes.
But it is inside the 20 percentage is the highest of his career. He's been good. He's a weapon. He had a couple of big deep punts when they needed it. He's been
Yeah.
fine. No questioning Jack Fox.
Yep, I think he's been great. I'm with you 100%.
Jake Bates, I don't even want to say Jake Bates on the other hand, but he's missed a couple of extra points. He's made all of his field goals, but they haven't trotted him out to try to boom a big one. Nothing over 40 yards.
Yeah, he missed one extra point, right?
I thought he missed two. Okay, he only missed one.
Yeah, missed
He's
one extra point,
been
but he's been,
close on a bunch of them.
yeah. Well, but
Yeah, you make them, you make them.
just make him, right? Yeah. It was interesting. Dan Campbell said that he was considering using him on like a 70-yarder late in the game. He was like, man, if we could have gotten like five more yards, I would have really been thinking about that. And it was he's got the leg, man. The leg is unreal. So, but that's a real tough ask.
Yeah, give it a shot.
I
Why
mean,
not? We don't know until you try it.
when you're up two scores, I guess that's the time when you do it, right?
Right. Hogan Hatton had a tackle, or
Hmm.
to
Nice.
assist. Yeah, nothing else. He hasn't botched any snaps yet, so even the
Attaboy.
Bates miss, it wasn't a high snap or it wasn't a bad snap, so.
Right. So good. Good for Hogan. I don't have a whole lot to say other than that. I
No,
think
I
the,
know. I
again,
know.
we Jake, they haven't really tested him. He's been good with what he's gotten. Fox has been terrific. Hatton hasn't made a mistake. That's great. That is what you want out of a special teams unit. The outside of the kicking specialists, best special teams grade from like PFF goes to Khalil Dorsey. No surprise, right? Second best grade, Vaki. Again, I don't think that's a surprise to anybody. Third best grade, Nieminen. I mean, again, that's why he's on the roster, right? He's on the roster because of that. And then Strickland and Reeves Maben round out the top five. So those are the guys you expect to play. Like one of the main reasons those five guys are on the team is because of what they do. After that, Malcolm and Brandon Joseph, Derek Barnes, Craig Reynolds, Parker Hesse, again, guys you expect to play well are playing well on special teams.
All right. That's it. That's really all we wanted to cover today.
Want to talk about coaches, or I hadn't really thought about that, but we usually
Well,
don't, but I
I
didn't know
get
if you wanted
well,
to.
we can. It's gonna fall right. Let's do it. Let's see where it goes.
Well, okay. First, so Dan Campbell, he's taken a couple risks. Fourth down play, the fourth down fake punt, Devaki took a lot of guts, executed it, thought that was really good. I think he's not been too risky at times, and he's been aggressive when I wanted him to. And so I'm pretty happy with that. He's also used one challenge and won it. So that was a good timing, good call. That was the fourth down play that Kyler Murray ran that the ref said that he challenged that, and it turns out he was short, which we was the right call. And then he also had the end of half at the against the Bucks that he messed up, right? So like he's not perfect, but I think overall, he's been the guy that we kind of expected as well. So that's my overall thoughts on Dan Campbell. You have a opinion on him as well?
Well, no, nothing. He has been more conservative than he was in previous seasons, but maybe he's finally got the team where he can be, like they're comfortable with their defense. And he busted out that fake punt, which is great. As long as he doesn't lose that aggressive streak, which he hasn't, I
Right.
think it's fine. Like, yeah, to me, he definitely botched the Tampa game with a couple of decisions there, because he could even go to the end of the game when they could have kicked a field goal and then got Tampa to punt and then kicked another field goal. I know you'd
Sure.
say that. I know you feel a little differently about that one, but he is what he is. You got to take the good with the bad.
Yeah.
After living for years with coaches that aren't aggressive, that just do the conservative type of thing and then losing all the time, it's better to have somebody that goes from broke and win most of the
I'm with you. I'm
time.
all about the aggression. I think that's how you win in the NFL. So happy with again, not overly surprising, happy with what I've seen. I think Ben Johnson has finally found his rhythm. Slow start for Ben, more conservative approach for Ben off the bat. Tried some things that didn't work against the Bucks. I think their game plan by just trying to replicate what they did in the playoff game wasn't the right decision, and it turned out that it kind of limited them. But I think Ben has really found his rhythm the last two games, and I'm excited to see where that goes. Just an add-on, Scotty Montgomery, the running backs coach, I think has done a sensational job because of how great the running backs have played. So you got to give him a little attaboy as well. And then of course Hank Fraley, the offensive line coach, is just the best offensive line coach in the league. So give those
Well, we'll
guys
see if he can
some
develop
flowers as
Manu.
well. Right. Yeah, no, that'll be his test, right?
I agree with you, Johnson. The first 3 weeks weren't great. He seems to be back on his game here in week four. Let's just see where it goes from there. See how he does against the Cowboys.
I think Aaron Glenn has had a mixed start. That's kind of been his MO, though, during his stint in Detroit. He's had a combination of really good games called and then really questionable games where he maybe is unwilling to adjust because he believes in his game plan. He believes in the preparation he does. And so you end up with mixed results. Overall, I think the defense is playing much better than they did last year. And so you got to give him credit for that. He's been creative in how he's called some of these games, and he's after being really blitz heavy the first couple, he's been more strategic with his blitzes in the last few couple of games, and I think those have paid off. He did a lot of blitzing the first couple, and I think he got a little bit predictable, and I think he changed that up. So really happy with him. I think Kelvin Shepard, the linebacker coach, continues to be one of the best position coaches in the NFL. And I don't think it will be long before he starts getting defensive coordinator interviews. And then Terrell Williams, the defensive line coach, new defensive line coach this year, has already, I think there's a deserves a lot of credit for already impacting Aiden Hutchinson. He's already been giving him tips on what to do, and Aiden, he's a part of how Aiden has been able to elevate his game. So Terrell Williams already making a big impact on the defensive line.
I would agree with you about Glenn. Although part of me also says, like, they spend more money on offense, so he's kind of getting the best he can
Sure,
out of the defense, even
sure.
when you give him a hard time about what happens from game to game. Yeah, as far like it sure does seem like Kelvin Shepard's one of the best position coaches in the NFL. Look how well his position grouping has played over the last 2 years. So,
Yeah.
and yeah,
Yeah.
and Terrell Williams, he got all that. There was a lot of praise, and the Lions brought him in. So far, so good.
Yeah, he's paying off for sure. I mean, we can talk about Fipp for a sec.
Dave Fipp, he knows how to set up a fake punt.
He knows how to, he's crafty and quirky, but he's a veteran coach, and he believes in what he does, and there's rhyme and reason to what he does and why he makes the decisions that he does. I do think he's partially at fault for the end of half disaster with the Bucks, with the field goal unit playing the fire
Yeah,
drill there.
fiasco.
I think he deserves partial responsibility for that, but beyond that, he's been good. And look, Bates was wildly inconsistent in camp, and Fipp has helped him get to where he's 5 for 5 and 11 of 12 on extra points, 5 of 5 on field goals, and 11 of 12 on extra points. Jack Fox continues to be terrific, and you've got an undrafted rookie long snapper that hasn't made a mistake yet. So Fipp deserves a lot of credit for that as well.
Anything else you'd like to say about the coaches?
Nope.
Latest review. We got one from Mule Kicks on Tuesday. He says, great pod. These guys give the best summary of the past week and analysis of the next week. Best Lions podcast out there. That's very
Ooh,
nice of them.
nice.
That
Dig
was the
it.
boost there. We got a couple other reviews there on Spotify. I think we're moving along there too. So everybody keep rating. We really appreciate it. Keep listening too. We really like that too.
All right.
Anything
You
you
can have.
wanted to add?
No, man.
This is quite a week. This is a crazy weekend for in full football season, at least locally, right? Spartans play Friday night, late Friday night. Michigan plays Saturday night. Lions don't play at all. Tigers play at 1 o'clock or 1:30 or whatever it is on Saturday. So it's a crazy schedule this weekend.
We are doing the Pride of Detroit crew is doing a meetup for Sunday during the afternoon games. We've scheduled an event at Bookies Bar and Grill in Detroit, and we have all the information up on our main page of our website. But we're a collection of us writers are all going to go to this bar, and we've basically like blocked out a big section of the bar for anybody who wants to come and kind of hang out and watch some football. And so I'm going to be there watching those, at least the first afternoon game. We'll see how far I get with into the second because, you know, I have children,
They'll be
but
fine.
I'm
They
going to
can
be
fend for themselves.
but yeah, I'm going to spend a little bit of time doing that. I'm going to spend my Saturday in between watching the Tigers and trying to get some housework done because after this bye, it's going to be intense and it's going to be just go, 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 go for, you know, the next 4 months.
13 weeks.
Right. Yeah. It's going to be
Yeah,
just
well, hopefully,
go.
yeah, as long as possible.
Right. So if you got stuff to do outside or whatever, put all your patio furniture away, take care of all your business because the Lions are going to take up a lot of time moving forward. It's going to be a heck of a lot of fun.
That's a thing. If you're a casual fan of the local sports teams, like, or if you're a big football fan and a big Detroit sports fan, like you would be targeting this weekend
Yeah.
to do stuff, to get stuff done on
Yes.
Saturday and Sunday,
And then
because and then the Tigers just
the
go right in the middle of it, you know, right in Saturday afternoon where you could have been planning whatever. You know, if you're a Michigan fan, it's like, oh, the game's on at 7:30 on Saturday. Like, I got all day to do other stuff. Same thing if you're a Michigan State fan, like, start the weekend off, get them out of the way Friday night. You know, no Lions, it's all wide open from there. And now, boom, plant the Tigers right in the middle of it. This doesn't come along too often, though, so
No,
you
you have
have to
to enjoy
enjoy
it. Yeah, you
it.
have to for sure. So, enjoy your weekend, buddy. I
Yeah,
hope
as
you get
should
to
you.
maximize your time. I'm
No, I
going
won't.
to
I won't. Never, never do.
I've been looking forward to this week trying to get some rest because I feel like I'm going from training camp right into the regular season. I feel like I was go, 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 go. And I've not maximized my rest at all. And now I'm like, oh my gosh, I got to do this. I got to do this. And now the Tigers playing has really thrown a wrench into the day as well. And so,
Right.
yeah, I'm definitely just head down trying to power through as much as I can. And we'll see how far I can get before I get burnt out. Hopefully I don't burn out till second week, third week of February.
Yeah, well, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yep. Yeah, that's all we got. Hopefully, we talked a little bit about everything. We're all right. We'll be back next week. We'll preview the Cowboys game. We'll all be fired up and hopefully
Oh,
they get a
yeah.
little revenge on that one, but we'll talk about that next week. So that's it. That's all we got. So until next time, let's go Lions and go Tigers.